good place now. You are listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Live Your True Life Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. You know, I was talking and thinking about tonight a good concept and who to have on the show, and I couldn't think of anybody better but Tony Dennison. Tony's been on the show one other time, actually, but he happened to be in town in the place that I actually call home. And it's very interesting, so I decided to ask him some questions, get a little deeper than the last conversation we had, but really just get to know Tony as a person. Tony, it's great to have you live on Live Your True Life Perspectives. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing really good. I'm living the dream, as they say.
So everybody says that, I'm living the dream. Tell me what the dream means to you.
Well, you know, when you find something that you love to do and you can pursue it, and then call that your vocation in life, I consider myself living the dream. I didn't always want to be an actor, and when the bug bit, and I mean it bit hard, I thought, okay, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. It took me quite a few years after that to finally make this be what I do for a living, I'm not sorry that it, whatever side tracks I took, side roads I took. But here I am, and it's really great.
That kind of leads me to another question. You know, a lot of people have dreams, they have ideas, and with you, you had the desire to act. At what point in time did that acting, you know, bite hit you, and you kind of started putting that into motion, the reality of making it basically a lifetime reality?
Well, I was about 28 years old when the bug bit me. I was out of work. I was a newspaper editor, and I had been out of work for a while. And my now ex-wife, said to me, you know, you ought to consider doing something at the college, you know, where I had graduated from. And I said, watch, because, you know, they have this really cool continuing education program. Maybe you might want to do something there. And I was like, all right. So I looked at the brochure, and there was class on acting, and I thought, you know, my mom, God rest her soul, she used to say to me, Anthony, you know, you ought to be an actor because you're the greatest storyteller that ever lived, which is a euphemism for you know how to lie like really well. And so I thought, all right, what the hell, you know, and I took the class, and I had no desire to do anything other than just take the class, you know, just experience what it was like. And then the teacher asked me to do a night. There was a presentation night for the whole entire continuing education department. It was music, dance, you know. And then the evening was going to be capped off by a scene from a play. So he asked me if I would do this scene from Death of a Salesman with him. And I was like, okay, fine, I'll do it. And I was petrified. I mean, when I originally agreed to do it, I didn't think anything of it. Then 2 weeks later, when it was time to do it, I thought, what the hell have I gotten myself in? I can't do this. This is insane. And I remember I was like, I literally beside myself. Like, and when I was looking myself in the mirror was not talking as I was. So that's literally being beside yourself. And because I thought, okay. And then they said, Tony, places. So I went up, sitting on the cot/bed, and he was sitting on his cot/bed, and I was just waiting. And I remember it being really cool back there. And then the curtain was up a little bit, and then the lights went out and the curtain went down, and then the curtain came up and there's lights. And I had the first line. I had to walk downstage left, and I had to listen to somebody in the lighting booth making like really erratic noises with a flute, which was supposed to be Willie Loman, because it was a scene from Death of a Salesman, Willie Loman yelling in the kitchen. And I remember I turned to him, his name is Fred Douglas DeMayo, cool guy. And I turned to him and I went, you hear that? He's doing it again. That was my first line. And all of a sudden when I exhaled, it was the first time I thought I actually took a breath maybe in about an hour. And as I was breathing, you know, dealing with him and dealing with, you know, the noise, all of a sudden I could feel the audience breathing with me. And the audience was like, they were in tune with me. And then in that moment I said, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And I had done so many other different things in my life that this was, it just seemed like so out of left field. But, you know, about a year and a half later, 2 years later, I found myself in New York pursuing my career. it was struggling at first, and then I got sidetracked for a while with gambling, clubs, and drugs, and all that nonsense. And then I got back into the business, and then like a year after I got back, 2 years after I got back, I caught a break on a TV series called Crime Story. Michael Mann executive produced the show, and my life turned around.
You know, it's interesting when we talk about struggling, and I think that there's like two groups of people in the world, and it's people that have struggled and go through the struggle and know that if they keep going, that there's going to be light at the end of the tunnel, or at least they hope so.
Right.
Or people that turn around and say, you know what, this is too much for me, okay? I'm not doing this. This is crazy. This is like the universe is against me, you know? And I've looked at it from both sides of that, but I've also realized that it seems like it's a struggle before the light. Like, you have to go through all these different struggles. And one of the things that I dealt with, too, and I totally understand, is going through that process of maybe not finding the value within ourselves, going out to the nightclubs, partying it up, hanging out with people that we probably wouldn't hang out with unless we were totally, you know, out of it, you know. And we kind of go through that process, and it's not until we have that kind of come-to-Jesus conversation where we go, what the hell am I doing? And you've been there. Mm-hmm. At what point did you kind of just say, I got to put this behind me. I got to move on.
I don't know. I don't know if I ever did.
You don't think you ever got past the whole desire to party? I mean, obviously, you're
well, I just found a new way to enjoy myself. You know, I guess what you're talking about is hitting a bottom.
Somewhat, but I know what you're saying, though. You found another way to enjoy life.
Yeah.
Like, I can go and hang out with friends, and I don't have to drink. Like, I found that I can actually have more fun, because I can get around it, and then I can have fun, and I'm already a kid anyway, so I don't really need to add anything, and I figured out that it would actually kind of take away the fun that I was having.
Well, my big fun, too, a lot of times when I go to parties now, industry parties or just parties, is to try to discern which ones in the group are alcoholics, you know, and then I say, I think that person's an alcoholic. And then, like, later on as the evening progresses, they prove me right, you know, by how poor they are in handling their drinks. And then, you know, and then the certain women come in, a situation, and they look like, you know, wow. And then, like, an hour later, you're like, wow, get away from me. You know, you are so smacked.
I went to a party recently, and a friend of mine was kind of in that same situation. I took one look at him, and I was like, you know what? I think it would be best if you leave and have someone drive you. Oh, no, no, no.
Well, that's what happens. You know, you're right. I mean, a guy be at a party, some really beautiful girl walks in. He zeroes in on her right away. And then, you know, they both have a few drinks, but she gets a little crazy. And then, like, you know, a year later, he wakes up in bed next to this woman thinking, what the hell am I doing here? You know, but the signs were there the first night, but they just chose to ignore them.
It's true. I'm also a therapist besides doing the radio, and it's funny because I had some clients that have come in recently and said, you know, he knew how I was in the very beginning. And I had two clients that are actually going to come on a show here soon, and they've been together for about 15 years. And, you know, one's upset because the other smokes weed.
Uh-huh.
And I said, so when did you start smoking weed in front of this person? And she said, we met the night that we met at a concert. I had a joint and he smoked with me. And now he's got a problem, you know, 15 years later that now I'm still doing it. And he knew what he was getting into back on that first. We didn't even know. We weren't even going on a date. We just ran into each other at a concert and then started dating after that. And I think it's interesting how sometimes people can go, why is this happening to me? Why am I bringing these types of people into my life? And it's like, well...
Yeah, well, I tell people if they just... When they go out on a date, in the first three dates, if you really, really, really listen, I mean, listen with an open heart and an open mind, you'll know right away a lot about this person, and you're going to determine, hey, this is what it's going to be like 6 years from now. This is not, you know, unless the person goes through a radical change, that's kind of who they are. And because I can't tell you how many times, like, I'll be dealing with people and they go, I can't believe that he does that. He sounds like such an idiot. And we'll go back in conversation and say, well, I thought he was just kidding that first night, you know.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I've had clients sit there and say, oh, I can't believe I dated this guy after 5 years. He's insane. And right. I was like, can you think about your first date and what was being said? When they go back, they go, oh my God.
And it's a good bet too, if you're with somebody and they're taking kind of quasi-racist, quasi-bigoted comments about people and about people that they know, that in a short period of time, they're going to be talking about you that way. Even if they profess with one sentence, oh, I love you. And then they're going to be out with their friends, oh, my wife is a, or my husband is, you know, it's so, no, I mean, nobody enters into this world with a guarantee to be perfect. But striving for some kind of perfection is a cool thing. And wanting to improve yourself is, you know, is, I think, is wanting to evolve and wanting to change, I think, is the key. And I think that when you're with a person, the first couple of dates, you can figure that out.
You know, I agree with you on that. And I think it's interesting. A lot of folks, you know, that, you know, I have to go over, I have to get through this, or I can't seem to let this go, or what have you. And I see it happen a lot of times with married people, married couples that are dealing with, you know, extramarital affairs, all kinds of different things. And it's like there comes a time when you have to just have this conversation with yourself and say, you know, we've gone down this path numerous times. I'm not going to sit there and count it for them. But it's like you come to this point in your life and you say, what am I doing? I mean, it's going to be the same thing, even if it's not the same person. It's still going to turn out basically the same way. Mm-hmm. And how many times do I need to learn this lesson? You know, and I try to explain to people, I say, you know, it's amazing. It takes a little bit of work. But once you get over that plateau and you start realizing how it feels to do the right thing, and you keep doing the right thing, even though sometimes you think you're missing out on something. And I mean, because I'm one of those people, I sometimes think I'm missing out on something. Like, everybody else is having the party, and there I am just hanging out at the house. But then I realize I'm doing the right thing.
You know what's funny, too, is people will do that what I call the uncomfortable laugh. You know, you'll say something, like you're with somebody, and you'll say something really, not way out in the outer stratosphere, but, you know, and then they'll like laugh, like, and you can tell that the laugh is uncomfortable. And I always tell people, you know, when you get to that place where you're like laughing and you're just doing it because you're uncomfortable, mm-hmm. it might be good to follow it up with, you don't really believe that, do you? You know?
I like that.
You know, I'm curious, why would you say that? So that they can turn around and they tell you, because in, you know, 25 words or less, they'll say, because that's the kind of moron I am, you know?
I understand. I go into groups. I'm constantly going into, like, you know, group meetings and then group therapy. But besides that, just like interactions with friends, and you'll have somebody. And it's interesting because I find, and it's going to be hard to explain this, but I find this thing about us as humans is that it's almost difficult for us to just be completely loving and honest with people. I mean, with this altruistic concept of love, because I find that most of us, and I've been there before, feel that you can only fall in love with one person. And then if you feel any sort of feelings for someone else, that you have to ditch the person you're with or hide however you feel and continue to live this lie. And I found that a lot of times we misconstrue love for other people with this like all-encompassing one person love.
Yeah, there was a really cool philosopher. He's now gone. His name is Anthony DeMello, and he said in one of his lectures, "You're never really in love with the person. You're in love with your prejudiced and hopeful idea of that person, and then as the idea changes, so too does the relationship. And determining about how open-minded both of you are will determine like." The new level of the love, you know, where we'll go. But a lot of times people say like, yo, I'm in love with that person, you know, and I've learned that love is a verb, you know, and it's about the loving actions that you take for the person you're with and towards yourself. It's not a noun. And so many times people just, oh, I love you. You know, they don't understand what it means. And, but anyway, this guy DeMello is pretty cool. You know, he also talks about most people being asleep. You know, we're born in our sleep. We marry in our sleep. We have children in our sleep. We even die in our sleep because we don't ever actually fully wake up, you know, and try to like, he has this interesting thing that I tried doing one time. This is really like off the beaten path of a lot of his lectures. But he was like saying, he says, like, when you see a bird, he goes right away, you say, oh, there's a robin. He goes, but that's so limiting to actually what that creature is, you know? And so now when I see birds, and depending on me, and I know a lot about birds too, and rather than going right into like describing them as a particular, you know, species of bird, I will like look at the bird and go, oh, it's Bob, you know, or because you could tell the male and the female based on the plumage and the colors. And I'll say, Bob, oh, that's Betty, you know, oh, that's Betty with the little blue stripe in her wing, you know, and you start to determine it. And then suddenly the bird just takes on like a so much more of a significant, like we all are. We're all humans, but we're all so incredibly different. And so is everything. So if you, everything else. So if you can look at life that way, I mean, I don't do it all the time, but when I do it, I find it to be really exciting.
It's interesting you brought up the concept of people being asleep. And I've done shows on this in the past about the wake-up call. And I've had people ask me, Ashley, does everybody get the wake-up call? Is it just me? How does this work? Because I have friends around me that just don't seem to get, just don't seem to figure it out. And I try to explain this, is that everybody gets the wake-up call. We all get it, right? That wake-up call, if you're in that hotel and you ask for that wake-up call, it keeps on ringing and ringing and ringing. But the concept is, do you pick it up? And I find that some of us will have an alarm clock, and that could be also our wake-up call, and we'd rather take that alarm clock and throw it off the balcony and run over it with the car as many times as we possibly can. It kind of reminds me of Groundhog Day. I don't know if you saw
that. I love that movie.
And it's kind of like, I think everybody gets that wake-up call, but it just depends on at what time in your life are you going to take that call, wake up, and say, okay, I got to finally take care of my responsibilities. I got to acknowledge the fact that I got to do these things, but it's not a bad thing. You know what I mean? It's not like I'm missing out on something. Do you find, I mean, in the industry that you find a lot of people that have answered their wake-up call, or do you find that you kind of have a mixed bag just like in anywhere in society?
Well, I think I've met some people who found their wake-up call. I mean, I had a wake-up call in terms of my lifestyle with, you know, drugs and alcohol and gambling and stuff. And so I had my moment of clarity. There's a guy named Joseph Campbell who talks about, you know, a hero in society and, you know, and he talks about rumors and myths and legends and what happens, I think, to every single human being on Earth, which is where drama comes from, albeit a comedy or, you know, a serious play or movie. The main character, the male or the female main character, and then our own lives, they get to a certain point where they are in that particular point in their life sucks so bad that down this like long dark hallway is a door, and that's their only way out. And sometimes people, when they're willing to say, this is nowhere, I can't keep doing this anymore, and they rather go down that long hallway, not knowing if it's relief or joy or whatever, just different. It's got to be better than where I am. And the people who make that decision, their lives change in amazing ways. And the ones who stay there still trying to figure out, okay, well, wait a minute. Or maybe, look, let me just go sleep. Let me just sleep on this. Or let me, you know, and they're afraid. I understand fear. I mean, fear is probably one of the greatest forces in the universe. But fear can be overcome by, I don't want to sound like some, you know, woo-woo idiot here, but love, you know, real love and faith, and I'm not even remotely talking about religion because I'm not even remotely religious, but if you can find a way to have a knowing about something else as opposed to your fear, you have a shot, you know. But fear inflicts everybody. I mean, it's everybody. I mean, we're all caught up in this thing, I think, of time, space, and motion. There's never enough time. Time is going too by too quickly. Oh, look at the time. Well, that's too fast, or that's too slow, you know. And space, you know, what do I have? What's in my immediate zone? Do I have the big house? Do I have the little house? Do I have a nice car? Do I have a small car? Am I walking? Am I taking the bus? You know, and all those comparisons. And then motion, just in terms of how you're moving through all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And the things that are, I think, are inhibitors, the main thing that sort of is the overlord of this is fear. And if we can get past the fear and evolve and change to a place that thinking, hey, I've been down this place before. And if you can do that, you can find an alternative. I mean, hopefully you can find an alternative. I think everybody can. I mean, I don't think that we're fixed. Like, the universe is not fixed. And if we're all part of the universe, how can we be fixed?
I agree with that. And like you were saying earlier about the birds, you know, like this is Bob or this is Charlene. and you have like the bird concept. And I do the same thing. I mean, like I guess it's like you kind of, a lot of times people make judgment calls. Like, for example, you're, I guess if you're looking at it from this respect, okay, Tony Dennison, major TV actor, and people make assumptions when they meet you. And just like with the bird, we make the assumption that the bird is just as it is. And there's just so many other, you know, value that's permanent within that species, within the animal, within the person. And I think it's interesting how in life we tend to see people from one perspective, right? We see that one perspective. So we see, and it's not until we kind of like step back and realize that there's just so many different dimensions and sides to one person. However, a lot of times we might only see them in a certain social situation, or in a, like maybe you only see some of your coworkers on the show on the set, but you don't see them at home maybe taking care of the kids or doing something like that, where it would totally change the dimensional thought process of how that person is and even make them even more of a more well-rounded person. And I think that's what's so important. Like, I went to dinner last night with a couple that we've been talking about going to dinner forever. And we all have those people that we're always, oh yeah, let's go. Oh yeah, let's get together. Oh yeah, let's do it. And years goes by and you still haven't gone, and finally you do. And all of a sudden, everybody is just like, this was a good situation. We ended up closing down the restaurant because we were talking and talking and talking and talking, because they realized that whatever assumption they had of me was not a bad assumption, but they liked the whole facet, you know, and I liked the whole facet of them, because I was able to talk and we were out of the social situations where you got to sit there and do the glad handing. You could just sit there and be yourself.
Right.
You know, and that's what matters to me. It's like that bird. It's the same thing. It's like you can see all these different dimensions of it and not just classify it as it's a bird and all it does is fly.
Yeah, I think, too, that if you accept that, well, here's one thing about, I have a tendency to do this, as I suppose other people, but I can just speak for myself, is that you get to a place where there's an arrogance to expecting that other people should do things the way you would do it. You know, and when I recognize that feeling, and that's the evolution of my life, is now I can recognize that feeling, and then I immediately go to, you know what, they're doing the best that they know how. You know, and it doesn't mean that the best they didn't know how is now how I would still do it, to say like, oh well, see, if they were doing it my way, they'd be just, they're doing the best that they can given what, who and what they are and where they are. And when I start accepting that, I become much more tolerant and much more like, okay, accepting, because acceptance is the key, you know. And I realize that I have to forgive myself daily for not being perfect, but then in turn I have to forgive the other person for not being perfect either. I don't like doing that, you know. I want somebody to be, you know, to blame, and I want somebody to be sort of the responsible cool one, which would be me. But I have to do that. If I live my life any other way, I'm going to be miserable. And I wanted to talk about, this is a complete non sequitur, but when you were mentioning before about the restaurant,
mm-hmm.
You know, one of my pet peeves in life, I don't know why it came into my head.
What is it?
Going to restaurants and the restaurant hours, well, let's say, you know, 10 to 10.
Yeah.
And you show up at like 8 minutes to 10 and they go, oh, you know, we're going to be closing soon. And I go, I know, you're going to be closing at 10. And they go, yeah, but, you know, and I was like, yeah, but you're going to be closing at 10. That means you're still open. Why don't you just change, you know? And I got into this big beef with a guy in New York, you know, one New Yorker arguing with another New Yorker. And I said, listen, man, I said, why don't you just say that you open at 10 and you close whenever you damn well feel like it? I said, so that I don't walk in here at 10 to 10, breaking my nuts getting to this place. You know, which we did. We moved heaven and earth to get to this, because somebody said, oh, you got to try this place down in the village. And I wish I knew the name of it, so, but then I would be trashing the place. But I
I still wish you knew the name of it, though.
Yeah. Anyway, so we got there, we subway to cabs, and we thought, oh my God, we made it. It's only like 12 minutes of. And we said, oh man, great. Oh, well, you know, we're going to be closing the kitchen soon. And I go, yeah, but it's only, it's like, so we're arguing with this guy for almost like 7 minutes. And he goes, look, we're closing in 3 minutes. I said, you weren't closing in 3 minutes 7 minutes ago when we started this conversation. I said, but you're still open. It's not past 10. I said, if it was 10 o'clock and I was arguing with you about this, you're right. Hey, buddy, you know. But why say you close at 10 when you're telling me you close it whenever the hell you damn well feel like it?
Well, it's
that
true.
Drives me crazy.
Well, they should just say 9-ish. You know,
yeah, 9-ish, 10-ish.
And it just has 9-ish out there because you're right. It's like, why couldn't you just come in?
I mean, there were so many people left in the restaurant, too. And I was like, what about them? He said, well, you know, I said, this is nuts, man.
We can order and then you can close the kitchen.
Yeah.
I mean, because we can put the last food in. And isn't that insane? So then you're like, where do I go now? I have to go to a place that closes at midnight?
I don't mean to be like completely, you know, contrary about it, but I just don't get it. Somebody's going to have to, maybe if I open a restaurant one day, I'll understand. Right now, I don't understand at all.
You know, everybody, that's interesting you brought that up because I do know some restaurateurs and I know some
folks.
But
I accept, but I don't understand. But anyway. Well,
but I know some folks that are just like, it's their passion. And anytime it's their passion, you come in at 10 to 10, they're like, come on in. I'll be honest with you. The kitchen's going to close in about 20 minutes, but we got you covered. What do you want? You know? But people that aren't passionate about it, their concept is, I just want to get the hell out of here. Okay? You coming in here, this has been a bad night for me anyway. This has been a bad year for me. I don't like what I'm doing at all. You know,
it would have been one thing if he turned around and said, listen, man, you know, this has really been a bad night. You know, it's just a lot of the crew, a lot of the people, they got to get home. It's like really been a long, crazy day. And I would have been, all right, fine. But to just say, you know, well, man, look, you know, I don't get it. I just don't get it. But an explanation would have been helpful. I mean, look, I have to accept that thing, the things that I don't understand. But I don't understand. So if there's ever a conference with restaurateurs, you know, I may go sometime with a camera and do a documentary on about why do some places stay open until the actual time they stay open till, and then put a close sign on the door. And the ones that just decide arbitrarily, oh, well, it's 12 minutes to, I'm going to close now.
It's interesting you brought that up because yesterday I was trying to go to the gym. And I was going to a gym that some of my friends go to. And I have a gym that I work out in my building. So I don't need to buy a gym membership. Okay. So I'm not into buying a gym membership. And they were like, just come with us, man. You know, we'll just go work out. I go, well, I can do some cardio. And then I'll head out and do some errands. So we get there. And the guy at the front desk was like, so you have your membership card? And I was like, no, I'm not a member. They're all members, but I'm not a member. And I was just thinking I could just, you know, get just like a free hour pass, you know, because I know you have an app, but I don't have the app on my phone. But I know that y'all are giving away a day pass for free on the app. And I said, but I don't have the passcode because I've had to reset that passcode a dozen times. And for most people out there, you don't know what their passcode is. I mean, you got number signs, you got ups, you know, capitalized letters, you have all kinds of numbers. I don't remember what it is. And so the guy looked at me and he goes, yeah, are you going to buy a membership? Are you thinking about buying a membership? And I was like, to be honest with you, I'm not. I'm not going to lie to you, you know? And he was like, okay, well, it's $15 then. And I said, oh, my God. I said, I'm going to do like 30 minutes of cardio. It's $15. He's like, come on. You know, you just, I was like, I can't do this. This sucks. I can't do this.
And
I was like, so I'm going to take off. And I was like, thanks, man. And I walked out. And you know what? The concept I thought in my head is when I was driving away, I was like, you know what? I could have died in that gym today. I could have died. Somebody could have hit me with a dumbbell and killed me. So I probably had my life saved because that guy is such a jerk off. But anyway, the point is that I agree with you. It's like, it's amazing what kind of business. And this kind of goes along the same thing as when you're following your dream. You'll do things that you don't see any sort of personal payoff at all, okay? You do it. Like if it's a charity, if it's an organization that needs your help. I mean, you know, after a lot of it, you know, sometimes you might be like, okay, wait a second, let me make sure this is exactly what I want to do. But for a long time, you go out of your way and you do things that there is no payoff. There is no money. There really is no glorification, okay? There's nothing of that. And I think that's going to that next level. And I find that a lot of people don't get to where they want to in life because they don't realize that you have to do things for other people because it actually really helps you out, but you have to also do things altruistically with the idea that, you know what, I might not get any money from this and I might not get any fame from this, but this is the right thing. And I know that you do a lot of charity work and I do a lot of work with schools and I have a lot of interns and I do a lot of stuff for, you know, helping kids figure out who they want to, what they want to be, who they want to be when they grow up. And there is no Medal of Honor. You know, and there is, in these cases, there is no news crews, you know, following you. But you love what you do, and you know that it's the right thing to do. It's giving back. And I know you do a lot of that giving back. And I think that it comes part of being on purpose, you know, realizing that not everything. And I think that's the same thing as that restaurant here. I mean, sometimes you might not want to be open after that, but, you know, you never know. And unfortunately, they probably didn't even pay attention to who you are. You could have written up a good review. They could have had all kinds of business, but they missed out on that opportunity because they were too busy just wanting to close.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. There's all different kinds of people, well, you know, that make the world flow, you know, spin around, but takes all kinds to spin the globe. But, you know, I find that I've been in restaurants where restaurateurs will sit down at the table with you and say, hey, you know, because if you've gone there a few times. And they'll always tell you, like really good restaurateurs, if there's even remote, even if the water that we bring to the table for free at the beginning of the meal, if there's something wrong with that, please tell me. Mm-hmm. Because if you leave here and you have any kind of like bad taste in your mouth, you know, manner of speaking, related to this restaurant, you're either one, never going to come again, and worse, you're going to start telling your friends, oh, don't eat there because, I mean, I can't do anything. A rumor, you know, in the Jewish religion, rumor is like when they blow the shofar. I mean, the last, I think, 30 plus 10 blows, it's for rumor, because rumor can destroy somebody, and you've never lifted, you know, they didn't even have a chance to defend themselves. So, I mean, for me personally, my own little measuring stick is, I'd rather shop most times in a smaller store and pay a little bit more if I have to, than go to some of these big department stores, you know, and get people who I can't do it because they're on the radio, but the international language of shrug your shoulders, you know. I mean, I've been in stores, they go, well, I don't understand, what language is that? And they go, what do you mean? I go, I don't understand what shrugging your, you know, what does that mean? You know, and it's just point me in a direction of somebody who knows more than you or is interested in telling me more than you. So a lot of times I've been in some big, you know, chain stores, and I think, you know what, I know you, look, I worked in chain stores when I was a kid, and I worked in all kinds. I caddied. I broke my back caddying. If you're unhappy with what you're doing, please leave. Go somewhere else. You know, for the meantime, this is where you are. And I was amazed at how some of these big chains stay in business with some of the employees that they have that are just, they're unhappy. They're unhappy being there. And then, you know, you go to some of the chains. There's like one big chain store in particular that I go to all the time because the people there just seem so happy, you know, and they're more than willing to help you out. But in the private, smaller stores, you know, that's where you get people who do a lot of, you know, so.
I agree with you. But I think that's all facets of life. You have people that are just unhappy in life.
Yeah.
They're unhappy.
Well, you can go to a toll booth and guys, you know, they're just, you know, they're unhappy doing what they're doing. And then you can go to another toll booth and there's a guy going, hey, how you doing today? You're right. I mean, it depends on the individual. I mean, it's not like it's any one particular chain store's fault. It's the individual. And I've, you know, unhappiness based on fear is an important thing. And, you know, but again, it's the contrast that makes it, you know, it's like when you go into a particular, there's one particular chain store that I go to, sometimes you'll get somebody in there, they're kind of like, they're miserable, you know, and you think, okay, fine. And then you'll go look for another employee to help you out with something. And that person is like the other day I bought something in the store and this guy spent, I mean, he's not on commission, mm-hmm. you know, and he spent almost, you know, because I can be, sometimes I can be very particular. And this kid spent about, I'd say, a good 25 minutes with me going That's through cool. all of the stuff, you know, all these particular things. And I was like, yeah, but what about, and he goes, well, you know, and I turned to him at one point and I said, are you working on commission, by the way? And he goes, looked at me like, what? He goes, no. And I'm like, oh. And I wanted to tip him $20 extra. And he said, no, 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 no. And I was like, no, no, come on, take it. And he goes, no, no, no. I said, I'm from New York. I always tip everybody.
I'm a big tipper. I believe in over-tipping.
But so I bought the item there, you know, and I was very happy. And I didn't even want to go look at some other stores to see if I could get it cheaper or get, you know, because this guy just made me feel like I was so important. And I think that's, you know, in terms of commerce, in terms of everything in life, if you could try to make the customer especially seem important, You know, that goes a long way. I mean, that goes a long, you know, goodwill, you know, goodwill. And I know they say the road to hell is paved with good intentions, but goodwill instead of good intentions.
I agree with you because it's a little different. Intent versus doing are two yeah. different things. You know, it's like potential versus being, you know.
Right.
I think it's interesting you brought up about the toll booth attendance. So it's funny. I had this was a few years ago. I had a gentleman contact me on my website, and he had found my book on Amazon, and he had read it, and he's a toll booth attendant. I think it was in Oklahoma, right? And so he's like, you know, I'm following my dream. And so he sends me this long message that was on my website, you know, and I got to read it. And he was like, I'm moving down to somewhere in Texas to go to an acting school. And I'm going to do this. And I was like, man, congratulations. So we emailed back and forth. And then eventually one night he emailed me and said, is there any way I could take you out to dinner just to appreciate, you know, talk about your book? And I was like, yeah. So I ended up meeting him for dinner, sweet guy. And he's like, I'm going to acting school and I'm going to be an actor. And I said, man, I believe you. And it was interesting. Yesterday, he went to his second. It was an independent film, but he's an extra in a film. And he had a commercial 2 weeks ago. And, you know, he, you know, reached out to me. He was like, man, I was a toll booth attendant, read your book, and now I'm actually acting. You know, he's like, I don't have a show, and I'm not like a main character, but I'm on my way. And I think that's what's so awesome is that he's found what he wants to do. And now it's like no stopping him. You know what I mean? If you want to be the president of the United States, and God bless it, I mean, if you're not going to die by now, and you have some years to work on it, you could do it. You know?
Excuse me. Reminded me of a really great story that I always tell. When I was selling life insurance one time, one of the many careers I had, I was very good at it, but not something I wanted to do my whole life. But I remember I had to pay a death claim on a family. I didn't know the family, but the policy had been in force a long time. And the husband died. He was like 45 years old. So I'd gone there to collect, you know, the death certificate and all that. And I take that with the policy, bring it back to the office. And then, you know, either I deliver a check or they deliver a check. So anyway, I'm at this house. The woman goes inside to find the policy and the death certificate. And there's this old Italian guy. This is upstate New York where I used to live. This old Italian guy, and he is, you can see he's making a violin.
Pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, and this wasn't, you know, this guy was probably, well, as it turned out later on, he told me he was like 76. And so I'm looking at the guy, and I go, wow, sir. I said, you know, and he's an old Italian guy smoking those Denoblis, you know, those old those cigars. Oh, my God, they smell terrible. And he's like, and I go, so you're a violin maker? And he goes, yeah, I'm a violin maker, yeah. And I said, how long you been doing this? And he says, oh, I say about 11 a year. I said, 11 years you've been a violin maker? I said, how old are you? And he says, I'm a 76. I said, well, what did you do before? He goes, I was a jeweler. He says, I hated being a jeweler. He says, my father was a jeweler, my grandfather was a jeweler, He says, so when my father died, I said, that's it, no more jewelry. I wanted to make a violins because this is what I had a passion for. And I said, and it was beautiful, I mean, what he was making. And I said, well, this is great that you're doing that. I said, it must be really rewarding. He goes, you know, he says, it's okay. He goes, you know what I'm going to do after I finish this as a violin? I'm going to make a boats. He goes, I want to make a boats. And then I realized, I was thinking, here's a guy who's 76 years old. Doesn't matter how old he is. He's just telling me, I was a jeweler all these years. Which is, you know, a nice profession, certainly. But I didn't like it, and I wanted to get out of it. And I finally waited for my father to die, and then I went and started making violins. And now I'm, like, making violins, and it's okay. But, you know, I look at boats, and I want to make... And I thought, that's a lesson for everybody. You know, at a certain point, it's like, why wait until somebody has to die for you to make a decision to change? You know, I mean, certainly if you have responsibilities to a family... You know, then you find the way to... human being, it's the famous business philosopher named Jim Rohn said that human beings will pay any price if they know what the promise of that price is. So sometimes, you know, you have a family, you have whatever, you have responsibilities, you adhere to those responsibilities, but you can always find time to follow a dream. There's always time in your day to follow a dream. And I'm speaking from experience that because I found that time, you know, I'm able to get to where I am today. And it's not to say that I'm any more noble than, like, my dad was a truck driver, and he's the greatest man in the world to me. He's my hero. You know, a Sicilian immigrant. He drove tractor trailers his whole life. But, I mean, but there was nobility because he was very good at what he did, and he never complained about it. You know, he said, this is what I have to do. This is how I take care of my family. So while I'm thrilled that I'm doing what I'm doing, but I love what I'm doing. And I look at it like, okay, there are people in the world who do different kinds of things. And you can tell those who love what they do, and you can tell those who are just like sort of miserable. And you wish you could do something for them and to, you know, shake them and say, you know, wake up, you know. But you can't, you know, because it doesn't mean that doesn't mean like my way is the only way, you know.
I agree with you, and it's interesting. I have clients that come into office, and the first thing they always talk about is their age.
Really?
Yeah, like I'm 48. Like most women start with their age. I'm 48. And I don't know what I want to do in my life. And I'm tired of this. And, you know, I'm almost going to retire, though. I mean, I'm getting up there. And so I guess I just got to stick to doing what I'm doing now because I can't change. And I go, I feel like we've kind of screwed up our thought process on aging, right? Like, isn't it kind of like when you hit 50, you're halfway? Don't you have like a whole nother life you could have?
Right.
And I think that we're all looking at it from a different, I mean, a lot of people are looking at it from the perspective of you hit 50 and you better just hope and pray that you win the lottery. And I kind of show people, hey, when you hit 50, you have another chapter.
I would be curious. I always wonder about this. How many people, when they finally retire and they go, oh, I'm retiring, that's it. How many people who retire versus people who don't retire? Who lives longer, the people who retire or the people who continue to find things to do with their life?
That's, you know, interesting.
Like, okay, I'm going to work at this now. I'm going to do this instead of, you know, just get in a car and drive around the country. I mean, I'm wondering how many people live a longer life. Which group lives a longer life? The people that retire and just put their hands behind their head and go, ah. Well, the people who go, you know, okay, so I'm retired. All right, I can go do something else.
Now what?
I mean, you think about civil servants like cops and firemen and what have you,
right.
Sanitation workers, all those. A lot of times they can get their retirement pretty early, and they go out and they do a whole new life in their 40s, in their early
50s. That's what's
50s.
So cool about it.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think it also goes back to the learning process, right? You know, like when you stop learning, you're dying, you know, you're dead. Yeah. And I think that when we stop learning, and sometimes when we allow ourselves to kind of, I have some friends that are retired, okay, in parentheses, retired, and it's like, they kind of forget what day of the week it is. You know, you'll call them up and they think it's like Tuesday. And you're like, okay. And it's like your mind kind of gets mushy sometimes because you're not using it so much. And I think even no matter what you do, if you decide to do landscaping, if you decide to do whatever, open up a restaurant, change the restaurant hours, stay open past 10 o'clock and serve. The point is that one way or another, I think that it's like taking on a totally different lifestyle. And for many people, they have kids, right? And so the kids are out of the house. They don't have to worry about that responsibility. And now maybe it's time to live for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I work with clients that are also a lot of women that are married that have children, and I talk about how in the beginning the purpose was the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the guy was their purpose. Oh my God, I love this guy. This guy is amazing. He's my purpose. And then the purpose becomes the kids. And then the guy says that now my wife doesn't pay attention to me anymore. Now she pays attention to the kids now. I feel like I'm not loved that much anymore. And all she does is take these kids to soccer practice and baseball practice and all this stuff. And then eventually they're taking their kids to college. And they're in the car and they got all the stuff for the dorm room and they get over there and they get the bed sheets out and they got all the stuff and they got the little stuff from Container Store and all that great stuff. And they, you know, they drive all the way home, you know, either like hiding themselves because they don't want to cry in front of their spouse. You know, the husband doesn't know how to feel. She doesn't know how to feel because they don't know what to do now.
I tell people to make a list of 10 things that they would like to do in life. You know, I don't care how absurd it might seem, like if, you know, be a cowboy, be an astronaut, be whatever. But then to write a small, short mission statement about why they would want to do that. And it can be, and then in that statement, it must not be anything related to fame or fortune. That the reason why they do this has nothing to do with how famous they're going to be and how much money they're going to make. Just why they would want to do that. And I'm telling you, I know people, you know, they do this and then they start pursuing one of the 10 things, but they realize there's 10 choices that they have that they didn't realize that, oh, okay, well, the difference between me doing that and doing that is, oh, I got to do this discipline, you know, paying that price. You know, human beings will pay any price. And, okay, that price seems really high. Well, that price isn't that high, spending a few extra. I had a guy one time, I mean, I really love this dude, and I haven't seen him in years, and he wanted to do anger management stuff, and you could see that he was not happy about it. So I said, do this list. And he did the list, and the number one thing on his list was being a maitre d' at a restaurant. And he had the longest mission statement about it, and it obviously had nothing to do with money or fame or fortune. I mean, it was just, and it turned out, I said, you know, why? Why this particular? He says, well, when I first got sober, he said to me, he was a schmata salesman down in New York. And when he got sober, there was a meeting that he used to go to in the village. And the meeting didn't start till 7. So he'd get out of work at 5 and he'd be there right away. And he would hang out at this really nice restaurant for an hour and a half every day. And he got to be very friendly with the maitre d'. Mm-hmm. And this guy's also a very sharp dresser because, you know, he's a schmata salesman, so he knows from clothes. Cool. And he said, like, you know, he would eventually, the maitre d' sometimes would say, look, I got to go to the bathroom. He goes, will you just watch the front for me for a second? And people would come in and they got to recognize him and he'd seat them at different places. Hey, how you doing? You know, and he loved it. And he didn't do it. He didn't follow the dream.
He didn't do it?
No.
Why not? Why did he not do it?
Because there was more money in being in anger management. No. And now he retired and he retired, you know, somewhat unhappy.
Mm-hmm. He could go out and do a maitre d' now. He could go do that now.
Yeah. Hopefully he will. I don't know.
There was a guy, it was a few years back, I was in Malibu, and we were eating over at Wolfgang Puck's restaurant, and some friends of mine that had invited me to the restaurant were close with Wolfgang Puck. And it was funny because, you know, they were kind of waiting to see him and to talk to him. And right when they thought that he was walking around, it was another gentleman. He was in his late 80s. He comes walking to the table and he's like, hey, he's like, I've never met you before. What's your name? And so I was like, you know, Ashley Burgess. And he's like, good to meet you, Ashley. And so he looked at the person sitting next to me. He goes, do you mind if I sit down next to Ashley real quick? And so he sits down. This guy was a realtor forever. He was a realtor starting when he was about 30 years old on the beach. And every single night, his third wife, I guess, she's about 35 years younger than him, drops him off at the restaurant. And he goes and talks to every single person in this area. And he glad hands everybody and talks about real estate. Greatest guy ever. Personality was amazing. And it was interesting that people, when they love what they do, no matter their age, it's pretty... you know, it's really respectful and you like it. And it was just like the attention to detail. And he remembered everybody in that restaurant that he knew. And he would go and say hi. And he sat with me for about 10 minutes. And I just thought that was neat. It just goes to show you that basically if you're decently healthy and you try to keep your health up, because our time and our health are really what the most important things are, right? And then we can do really whatever we want to do.
If you can work at any one of those people who I was mentioned before, work in chain stores and people who work in private, you know, little mom and pop operations, whatever, it doesn't matter. If you're not happy doing what you're doing, if you have a dream of something that you'd rather be doing, if you start immediately pursuing that dream, where you're working right then and there is just going to be a vehicle that's going to take you to your dream. And suddenly that vehicle is not going to seem as like, oh man, what am I doing here? I'm getting minimum wage. This is, if you have that dream, and we all have dreams. There's no difference between, I mean, there isn't really. I mean, maybe in sports is the only place that there's a sort of a
demarcation. Oh yeah, because of their age.
But with their age, you know, and maybe some guys are maybe more skilled than others. Natural gift. Maybe in sports, but even then, I'm not sure I'm going to sign on to that theory. But in every other aspect of life, I mean, people can. again, if it's not about fame, it's not about fortune, human beings can do practically anything that
That's
they really,
really
set their mind to.
You know, I'm really thinking about that more and more, and you're right. It's like dreams do become reality when you take out all the side stuff.
I mean, even if you're religious, you know, there's a thing in the Bible where Jesus says, ye are like gods, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, if everything about God is about pure positive thought, pure positive energy, and so if we're like gods, then that means our thoughts are energy. And if we focus them on something, we can create.
That's true. Yeah. I totally agree with you. I'm a big believer on that. And I do agree. I think one of the things that gets in our way as humans is comparing ourselves to other people. You know, when we compare ourselves, like, you know, example, if somebody wanted to be a talk show host and they're not a talk show host yet, or they are, but they're in a certain market and they keep comparing themselves to Oprah Winfrey. It could be a painful experience for a while, you know? And so it's like kind of breaking that back or, you know, doing financially well, but comparing yourself to billionaires. You know, oh, they have all this, they have all that. And I think that's when we stop that comparison, that's the hardest thing I find. And because a lot of times we compare out of just assumptions. Like we see a picture and we compare our life and we go, oh God, you know what I mean? Look at me, I'm screwing up over here, you know, not living up to what I think it is. And I think that comparison, when we get rid of that comparison, I think that comparison's a killer to our dreams. I think that because a lot of people will sit there and like, oh, I have no chance. Like the guy that does the tollway, you know, that does the toll booth attendance. If he compared himself to you or to actors at a certain level, he might not even get out of bed. You know, because he's like, how am I ever going to get there at my age and ever have anything? But when he was just like direct and purpose driven, he was like, you know what? I can do this and I'm going to go for it. And I'm not going to compare myself to people that are already out there that are doing major things. I'm just going to look at myself and just keep moving forward. And I think that's kind of one of the mysteries of life that a lot of times we confuse, because I've done it. I've compared myself, I don't even know how many times, to people where I'm like, oh, well, I'm not there yet, or I'm not that, or I wish I could just be at that level. But it's like every time I do that, it's like I'm cutting myself down mm-hmm. and I'm losing out on my value, really. You know, and it gets in the way of my life. So I have a question for you. How do you know, my book is called The 10-Day Challenge to Live Your True Life. My first book was Live Your True Life. Tony, for my listeners, for our listeners, how are you living your true life?
How am I living my true life? I don't know if I'm living my true life specifically, but I think I'm on the path to getting there, because I've discovered when everything was taken away from me, even in the midst of my career, at one point I had a point where everything was going away and I didn't understand why this was happening. And I realized that in the first 4 years that this occurred, that I had forgotten that life is about being truly happy with who I am, and that I'm a decent guy. I do certain decent things. I'm not perfect. Nobody is. But, you know, I do the best I can. I said, you know what? I got to be happy with who I am, not what I am, what I have. And when that started to come about and I started to become truly happy, then about 2 years later, little things started to come back to me in my career, but I had already decided I was going to have to find a new career. And I thought, okay, I'll figure out something to do. And all of a sudden things started to come back. And then I realized that all these things that started to come back were the result of my happiness, not the cause of my happiness. So as I go through life, the more and more happy I can become with just the concept of just allowing and accepting, then the more I'm being my true self, because it keeps you in harmony with so many different things. When I'm out of that, I'm like at odds with stuff. And the good news is today for me, after doing this for a while, is I recognize that feeling and I know I have to stop, put down my pencil, do not go any further, you know, wait until the time is right to then turn to the next page, you know, in the tests. And that's what I've learned to do.
Wow, I love that. And I think that reigns true for everybody. I mean, to some degree, we have to just kind of, we have to check ourselves. We have to realize who we are. And so any last word that you would like to leave us until we're going to hit you up to be on the show again? Was there anything else that you would like to leave lasting thoughts for tonight's show?
There's a great quote from Bob Dylan in It's All Right, Mom, Only Bleeding. He, not busy being born, is busy dying. It's like, I love that line.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, that is amazing. And I think that we've really talked a lot with Tony about purpose, about life, about living true life and what really matters. So tune in next week. We got a great show for you next. And Live Your True Life Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back this time. And well, yeah, I'll be back this time in three shakes.